Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Marilyn Comrie. Lovely to see you.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. I mean, this woman is something of a powerhouse. And as often happens with my illustrious guests, I start reading their CVs and get this kind of imposter syndrome thing kicking in. But check this out. She's an award-winning serial entrepreneur, but not just any old entrepreneur. She's a green tech innovator, a social purpose business pioneer, a lifelong campaigner for social justice, an international trade expert, and a sought-after keynote speaker. And check this out. This is the good bit here. She was honoured by Her Majesty the Queen in 2009 with an OBE for Services to Women's Enterprise. And she's been awarded the prestigious Kofi Annan African Leadership Excellence Award and an honorary doctorate by Birmingham University in 2018. And I'm not even scratching the surface here. So, welcome. Thank you for coming on my humble podcast.
Oh, no. Honestly, it's an absolute pleasure. Really looking forward to our chat.
Well, me too, because what I found really interesting was that there was this, you have this career and life which combines science, entrepreneurship, social purpose, sport, Mancunian can-do attitude, which I love. I, by the way, I was born in Stockport. Yeah. And I went to university in Manchester back in the 90s, early 90s. So I love me a bit of Manchester. Yeah. And you've got a massive big vision, which I want to dig into on the podcast. There's loads of good stuff in here for everybody. So sit tight, everyone. We're in for a wild, exciting ride today with Marilyn.
I hope I live up to the billing.
Well, you definitely will do. We'll make sure of that. Before we start, and before I forget, I always forget to ask people to subscribe to the podcast if you're listening. The purpose of this whole thing is to help people who are running companies not make the mistakes I made. So please subscribe and share and like and all that stuff so other people can find it. But I'm going to kick off with Marilyn to go back in time. We're going to go back to the sort of early teenies, perhaps, where there was a lot of international travel you were doing, international trade, particularly in Africa, particularly in Kenya. And you were planning on moving your family, who were based in Manchester, your sons, over to Kenya. But something happened. There was a whole kind of an event which sort of changed your life, I guess, at that point. Could you speak of what led to that and what happened?
Yeah, so I had been working out in Kenya for about 3 years, delivering leadership training, coaching and mentoring and development for the financial services sector out there. And I was building a business. I was loving it. The lifestyle of an expat is fantastic. I would leave Manchester Airport carrying my own bags. And when I got to Nairobi, people would be carrying my bags for me, had my own driver. And you went to great parties and mixed with the hoi polloi. And it was really easy doing business because I was from the UK and being British meant that you were held in high regard. So anyway, I was building up this coaching and training business. It was going so well. So I'd already began to make plans to relocate the family to Nairobi. So I'm the mother of three sons and I'm a single parent. So that was a big life decision. And at the time, they were teenagers and still going through school. But they had their older brother who was there while I was away. And then it happened that I came back one weekend and I had come home for 2 or 3 weeks. And then the following week, there was this terrorist bomb at the Westgate Shopping Centre. And the important bit about that is that that was where I did my business. That was where I met with prospective clients. And if I hadn't been in the UK at the time, I would have been at the Art Cafe within the Westgate Shopping Centre and I would have been caught up in all of that. And every Saturday, I used to meet a really good friend of mine called Lisa Pearson, who worked at the British High Commission. We used to always have coffee there. So Lisa was there as our normal routine, but she managed to get her family out. Wow. And I was then sat here thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen? And I contacted the British High Commission at the time saying, how soon can I get back? Because I was really keen to get back. And they said, it won't be safe for you to return for quite a while. And I was thinking, oh my God, because literally I closed my business here, set it up abroad, and then was left twiddling my thumbs. And round about this time, excuse me for that, my battery is running low. If we can come back. Round about that time, my 18-year-old son, and he was 18 at that time, Niall, he was travelling the world on a kind of like gap year. So he was in the USA, then he went to Australia, ran out of money, because the terrorist bomb attack happened about October. And then he came home in the December while I was twiddling my thumbs. And he came back and he said, you know what, Mum, I've decided I don't want to go to university, because I paid for him to go on his gap year because he'd done so well in his exams. And he came back, and that whole adventure of travelling, looking after himself, meeting people from different cultures, had a huge impact on him. So he said, I've decided I want to be an entrepreneur like you. Mm-hmm. And I don't just want to be any old entrepreneur. I want to set up a business that will also help my younger brother, Blair, achieve his dream of reaching the highest echelons within motorsport, which at that time and still is Formula One. And I thought, that's quite a big challenge to take on board. And so that's when he decided he wanted to set up the Blair Project, and not just help his younger brother, Blair, but also help other young people, disadvantaged young people, to achieve their dreams as well, either as drivers, technicians, engineers. And most people don't know that motorsport is very expensive. So for us as a family, it was costing me £35,000 a year.
Really?
For Blair to race go-karts. To get to the level just below Formula One, you need to have a spare £2 million. So how many of us have that? And unless you can raise sponsorship, it's nigh impossible. So because I had nothing else to do at the time, because I was still waiting for the call to come back, I thought, I'll help him to set up this business. And he decided that he wanted to not try and work with the status quo, which is very elitist, but challenge it by creating his own series. And that's when he decided he was going to go down the route of electric motorsport. So he came up with the idea, firstly, of developing the world's first 3D printed go-kart, which we managed to get some engineering support in, and we're able to do it. And the success of the Blair Project has been about collaboration. So Niall, as a young entrepreneur, came up with the idea, and then he worked with more experienced people like me, partners at Create Education, Ultimaker, to make those dreams come true. And so we created the world's first 3D printed go-kart. We worked with with young people from schools who then created their own 3D printed go-kart. And we had our first test day at Three Sisters Racing Circuit, and Prince Harry came along. Wow. And that was transformational for us, because as an organisation, it gave us national and international coverage. And as a result of it, a university in the US said, we have an electric go-karting series for schools, and we'd love to partner with you to bring it to the UK. And we thought, great, because that was the direction of travel we wanted to go in. So we partnered with them, but we wanted to introduce innovation. And so we managed to get some money to pilot our Proto EV STEM Challenge in 2018 with two schools, three youth clubs. And that was very successful. So what we did there was we converted a used petrol go-kart into an electric one, which the young people got to test and race. So it was basically a proof of concept series, but it set us up on this trajectory, because we are currently the only organisation in the world doing this. We are currently the only Black-led motorsport organisation dedicated to developing engineers and technicians within motorsport. And as a result of that, we were identified and recognised by Lewis Hamilton's Hamilton Commission as being exemplars of best practice. And our mission is really around normalising diversity in motorsport and also the science, tech and engineering world. So that's a bit of the background. But to be honest, Dan, if anybody had ever told me back in 2013 that I would be now involved in a motorsport business, I would have told you that you'd lost your mind and you needed to retrace your footsteps to find out where you left it. So I think that's the story, that actually it's like Bruce Lee says, be like water, be adaptable. The world is changing at such a fast pace. The only constant in the universe is change. It's happening quicker and quicker. So actually you have to, all of us have to get to a place where we learn to adapt and flow with the tide rather than resisting it and trying to swim upstream, which takes up too much energy.
Yeah, that introduction has got so full of rich material. I'm just going to unpack some of these threads, but that last thing you just said there is really, I would like everyone to just reflect on that, and swimming against the tide is just go with it is much easier, but we'll come back to that. I'm curious about something. So October, this bomb goes off. December, your son comes back with his grand, exciting vision. November, right? Your business is like kind of gone up in smoke kind of thing. You've been traveling and investing a lot of time, and I imagine money, into this. You've sacrificed time with your family. You've been away. Your son's off traveling, etc. And so you've put your heart and soul, I'm assuming, into this venture. Yes. And now it's not happening anymore. Right, yeah. Because of global terrorism or whatever. The government says you can't come back. So what was going through your mind in November of that year? It's just 2013, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I think the first emotion was just shell-shocked. Hmm. Kind of like you can't believe it. And then there comes a point where you begin to accept it and that it has happened. And then I was still a bit lost as to what I could do. Because at that point, I had no idea, because then I was thinking, oh, my God, I might have to restart my business here in the UK. But I had so much of my emotional energy invested in the idea of going to live in Kenya and enjoy this. And the expat lifestyle is truly good. Enjoy this lifestyle, and the sun's virtually always shining, and there are just great things to do, and I just thought to myself, what do I do next? I didn't have the answer. And to tell you the God honest truth, if my son hadn't come up with that idea that he wanted to set up a motorsport business, I think eventually I would have found a way to repivot. And I think repivoting yourself is particularly important in this COVID era, when, you know, the pandemic will come to an end eventually. And most of us are being asked to repivot ourselves or reinvent ourselves. So I was just doing, helping my son as a way of filling in my time, because your natural tendency is to try and go back to what you were doing. And so I wasn't a director to begin with, because I just thought, I'll write the business plan, I'll find other people to wrap around him to help him grow his business. And after 6 months, that's when I joined the business as a director. And that was mainly because of I'd put in place two individuals to help and support him. And one of them decided they wanted to take over the business. And they had set up the organisation on Companies House because he didn't do it. And I think this is, he couldn't do it. He was young. And I didn't want to interfere, because I thought, great, you've set up your business, you've got these two individuals. And it never occurred to me that somebody could behave in that way with somebody who was a young teenager and think, this is a really good idea, this Flair project. I am going to take it over. And what she said at the time was that Niall could be he could continue working in the business, but she went on Companies House and removed him as a director of the business. And she was planning to bring in other directors and take the business grow and develop the business based on the business plan that I had written. But luckily for us, we had registered the image rights of the Blair Project in Jersey. And we were able to say, well, okay, if you want to take the business over, you have to give us £10,000 a year for the rights to use the image rights. And that's when she gave the company back to us and we got our company back. But I think that's the lesson for us, because we were very trusting, very naive. And you genuinely don't imagine that an adult, a woman in her 40s, would want to do something like that to a young entrepreneur who was starting out and with his ideas and wanting to take it. So I think that, and that's been a regular feature throughout our 7 years, is that you trust people, you trust organisations, and then you actually find that they have almost ethical practices. And some of them have been educational institutions, let's put it that way, that you don't imagine would be like that, because they have equality and diversity, and they have all these policies that you foolishly think they adhere to, and actually you discover that these organisations are businesses. They are operating in a world where they are chasing money too. The one thing is, they know a really great idea and they think that they can bounce you out the way and take your idea and run with it. So that's the thing that we've had to learn, sadly, is that you can't trust people. And especially some organisations that you think wouldn't behave in that way. I think if they had been corporates, we would have thought, well, yeah, you know, you expect that.
Okay.
Or perhaps another business, but another not-for-profit organisation.
Oh, really?
Doing that is...
So that sounds like a kind of, you got this tumultuous period of, okay, the sort of Kenya's all happening, then it's really not happening.
Yeah.
You got this sort of, you're in this sort of world where what's going to happen. Then your son comes back and he's got this idea and you think, I'll help him out because what else am I going to do? Cause Kenya's off.
Yeah.
And then you get these sort of dramas with business partners and then you've had this repeating. So looking back at that, these experiences, what do you think you've learned?
I think the biggest thing that we've learned is that, that a lot of people engage with us because we are so innovative. And at the time, you know, when you're starting out, you're just grateful for anybody who will want to work with you and do business with you. And along the way, we've met great organisations like Create Education who support you. So you imagine that everybody is like that. And actually what we've learned is that, I'll be honest, that sometimes I think that our colour is an issue. And I mean that from the perspective of we've got great ideas and we work in the space of science, tech and engineering. And for instance, I'll give you an example. We were commissioned by Innovate UK to do a feasibility study around creating what's called an advanced manufacturing hub in Greater Manchester. And Innovate decided to commission us because they'd done a piece of work with Siemens and it was about creating something called Made Smarter, which was about increasing the adoption of Industry 4.4 technologies with SMEs. But Innovate UK thought it'd be great to commission a grassroots organisation. So they already had the top-down view, but they wanted the bottom-up view. So how did the world look like for an organisation like the Blair Project that was working with computer-aided design, additive manufacturing, teaching them to young people, teaching them to people in the community? So they commissioned us to do this report. And actually, what was interesting, because going back a little further, I'd enjoyed a 17-year career with the BBC as a programme maker and as a series producer And I would have told you up until then, I'd never experienced any racism or unconscious bias. But being awarded that Innovate UK contract to do the feasibility study unleashed a can of worms. So Innovate asked me to reach out to a number of organisations and tell them that I was doing this research and if they would collaborate and work with me. And some of them were educational establishments, some of them were corporate organisations. And I thought nothing of it, so I did that. And actually what transpired is these organisations, some of these organisations, four of them, contacted Innovate and were saying, why have you commissioned this woman to do this piece of work? And the bizarre thing was they didn't want it, the work, for themselves. It wasn't as if they were contacting Innovate to say, you've been unfair, we could have done this piece of work. They were just saying, why did you commission me? And I think their assumption was that I think they saw me as a very active person working within the community, and I was working with disadvantaged young people. And I think the assumption may have been that I wasn't educated, so they didn't know I had a chemistry degree. They didn't know that I had a very successful 17-year career working at the highest levels in the BBC. They see you working in the community. And we were working out of the Community Learning Hub, which was a former school in Wigan. And one of them even contacted a senior individual within the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy to say, there's this person going around saying that they've been commissioned to do this piece of work. Do you know they operate out of a rundown school in Wigan? No. And I thought, wow, when did we weren't poor, but when did working in the community, when was that a crime? Yes, we didn't have a nice, glassy, shiny building, but it's the fact that four senior individuals, and I'm talking about people who were CEOs or deputy principals of organisations, contacting Innovate to say, why her? And Innovate UK said to me that usually when they do feasibility studies, nobody cares, nobody contacts them, nobody reads it. But actually, this was the first time that they had had people ringing in saying, why have you commissioned her? And there was no other reason than it was me. And that was really bizarre. And I can tell you that I'm a really strong person. That was one of the lowest points in my life. Actually, there was a point where I thought, should I just give up? Because of who these organisations were, and they're very well-known organisations, because of who they were. And I was just thinking, why is there so much opposition and resistance? But actually, you know what I've learned through it, Dan, is if it tells you that you are awesome, it tells you that you are perceived as a threat. So these people who are turning over multi-millions in terms of pounds, we were a small community organisation at that time, turning over £80,000 a year. And I was sat there thinking, why are we being viewed as a threat to these organisations? I was scratching my head. Right. But actually what it told me was we were doing something right. We were filling a gap. And actually what they were frightened of was our creative ability, the fact that we were just an ideas factory. We were motivated and powered by a desire to make a difference. And we had something that they knew they would never, ever have in a month of Sundays. So actually, it made us aware of that we have something unique that other people want. They know that they don't have it themselves. And rather than work collaboratively with you, they try and take you out of the game. But it taught us to be really resilient. It taught us to bounce back. And, you know, and one of our favourite tunes is that Chumbawamba, I get knocked down, but I get up again. And every time, not just sometimes. So it's not been a plain sailing. We've had lots of highs and lows along the way, but we keep coming back every time. And that's the thing, Dan, that makes you unstoppable. And that's the thing that people most fear. So be awesome. It reminds me of, I grew up as a young girl reading Greek mythology and the stories of Jason and the Argonauts. And being an entrepreneur for me has been like that, the call of the hero, the young Jason, who set sail for the Golden Fleece. And our Golden Fleece was about transforming motorsport and setting up our own electric go-kart racing series in order to give opportunities to disadvantaged and unrepresented groups in order to level up, level the playing field. And we set out on this ship, which was a dinghy to begin with. And then with others, we built a wooden boat and set sail. And I think now we can say we've got an ocean liner. And now as part of our ocean liner, we have people like the Hamilton Commission and Lewis Hamilton on board, and universities like Manchester Metropolitan University, Oxford Brookes University, who have been great supporters, Institute of Physics, who've come on board. So we managed to get some great whales, because that's what somebody said to me. Oh, Marilyn, you're swimming in shark-infested waters. And they were absolutely right. And they said to me, in order to protect yourself, you need to get some big whales on board and enable to help you to fight off the sharks. And they were absolutely right. But we managed to set sail to Colchis, and we've managed to get the prize of the Golden Fleece. But actually, that process of going on this voyage, encountering monsters and your own personal demons, because that's actually the journey, is that you have to confront your own fears, your own sense of limitations, your own particularly fears around what happens next. You've been knocked down. Can you get back off the canvas and recover? Should you just give up? It's just too hard. And actually what happens is a process of human alchemy, where you're transformed from your base self, which is lead, into your brilliant self, which is a golden fleece, if you like. And that's what's happened through this. It's been like a process of fire, but it's a refining fire that does turn you into your brilliant best. And then you understand that you can cope and deal with anything that happens. So COVID, again, was another punch in the face. We were due to roll out our Proto EV STEM Challenge nationally. Then the COVID pandemic hit and we couldn't do it. We lost £250,000. And again, we were back on that canvas thinking, oh my God, we spent 7 years, at that time 6 years, building this business. This has happened. And what we did was we thought, right, we'll complete a feasibility study. We'd had some funding for to create the Manchester Innovation Activities Hub, which built on the Advanced Manufacturing Hub idea that I'd had with Innovate UK. We partnered with Bruntwood SciTech, who work within Manchester Science Park. They submitted the idea to government. And last August, we were awarded £4 million. To create this Manchester Innovation Activities Hub, which is part of a larger development called the Base Building, which is a £21 million development. So we are now encased within Manchester Science Park. We have our own centre, which is 25,000 square feet, and it will specialise in, it's an industrialisation and skills training centre, which will help SMEs to innovate new products and services within the green tech, green industrial revolution space, but also rapidly upskill and reskill local residents to take up well-paid jobs within that green growth sector. Mm. So actually, it's a story of how we've turned adversity and what into a great business opportunity. And now we're going forward better and stronger than we ever were before. So we've gone from employing 4 people, we're up to 10 now, and we're taking on another 10 people. So we are growing at a phenomenal rate.
What a story. I mean, really, what a story, an archetypal story. Yes. That's what you're saying. I mean, and what's interesting, and what held me, for what it's worth, when I was self-immolating back in 2017, that hero's journey story, I kind of tuned into this through Joseph Campbell and some other, stuff like that. And the idea that I was going out and fighting the dragon every day, like literally battling the demons. And the demons, a lot of them were mine inside me. And I think there's two points there. The demons you were facing were twofold. They're the external demons, the malicious intent partners or people, the people who were sniping and were prejudiced and discriminating against you, the people who were fearful of you entering the market, trying to take you out. And then the flip of that is the emotional state that inspired in you, the fear, the kind of, can I do this? That doubt, right? Those kind of demons that are kind of very, very powerful. And how, just looking back at all that, and I want to get into a couple of other themes that have come up in there. Looking back at that, what do you think you've learned most about how you manage that journey? You know, you're on the high seas, the waves are coming, the demons are coming at you. How do you personally handle that in the moment?
Do you know what? Being a family business helped, because we had Blair working in the business, myself and Niall, and we had two other employees. But it was being a family business that really got us through it, because there were times when I was thinking, should we just throw in the towel? And Niall would say, no, Mum, let's keep going. Because I think he was driven by a desire. He was somebody, he did okay at school. He wasn't the best, he wasn't the worst. He didn't cause any trouble, but he was what was known as a forgotten middle. And he left school and the teachers didn't believe that he would achieve much in life. So I think he was driven by this desire to prove them wrong. And so he wanted us to keep going. And I never wanted to let my son down, because I love my children dearly. And I thought, well, if he doesn't want to give up, I can't give up as well. But to be honest, Dan, that was really difficult, because I went from earning a lot of money to really scraping the barrel. I remember there were times when we probably had just about £100 left in the account, because all the savings, all the money that I had, and it's a considerable sum of money, all went into propping up the business during this phase of development and helping it to grow. And you were thinking, and there were times when I thought, oh my God, this is too difficult, because it was something that I'd never experienced. I came from quite comfortable background. My parents were working class, but we grew up in a big 4-bedroom semi-detached, and I went to grammar school and I went to university. And up until then, life had been really easy. Anything that I wanted, I could get. So actually, I had never had to experience this challenge of battling. Everything was a battle, and you had to fight for just to survive. And that's what it became, a battle for survival. And there were times I just thought, should I just go back to my very well-paid career in television, where I had an awesome reputation and I was still getting offers from people that I've worked with in television saying, if you ever change your mind and want to come back. And that would have been so easy. And I just thought, well, I haven't been through all of this to turn back now. And we had to keep going. And I'm so glad I did. But honestly and truly, that was probably the worst of it, is staring in the face of poverty. And that's what I would call it. Mm. And I think as a result of that experience, Dan, it's why I think in many ways I empathize with and care about people who have nothing, and people who are having to use food banks, and people who are being left behind, because you know that there, but for the grace of God, go I. Mm. So you know that you've walked in those shoes of not knowing how you're going to pay the bills, where the next penny is going to come from. You're believing in yourself. And you know, there were times when Mal had to get a part-time job at places like Apple in order to keep the money coming in. Mm. But we never stopped believing in that dream. And I think it was just that as a family, it was being a family that got us through, but we also have this wider family and people who supported us, like Chris Grant, who was the CEO of Sported, who helped to open doors for us. And the people like Paul Croft at Create Education, and there are other people that I won't mention at the moment, but they got us through that hard time. So actually the family, whether it's your blood family, but it's that wider family, we had a family and people who cared about us, and a madman who lives in Tilsley called Ian Tomlinson, who is part of, he is just such a joy to work with, who ran a project called Driven. But there were always people that you could call on and who would either boost your spirits, open doors, or help you to find those people who you could call on. And also taking advantage of opportunities to develop your business skills. So joining high growth programs, taking advantage of mentoring schemes. One of the best that we've ever been involved in, and I'll give them a plug, is Be The Business, who've provided us with our own advisory board. And this advisory board includes people from Ernst & Young, where we're getting some fantastic advice around how to franchise our Blair Project model and roll it out globally. But people with HR backgrounds, people with marketing backgrounds, and people who've run very successful education businesses. And we are benefiting from their knowledge and expertise. So that's one other thing I would say to any entrepreneur. You know what? Do go out there and get that help and support of those mentors who are invested in seeing you succeed, because your success is their success. Mm. So programs like Be The Business, I cannot recommend more highly. So go and find those individuals. If you haven't got your own family working in the business, create a family structure around you, a mastermind group, if you like, who will help and guide and direct you and pick you up when you fall down. I mean, that's probably the best thing as well. But that's what got us through those really difficult times.
I love that. And I would just really echo and support what you just said, particularly on this idea of creating your family around you, your network, your mastermind group. I mean, everybody, I have a mastermind group of pals, but it's become very nurturing. It's not really about business. It's about, hey, I'm feeling really down. I'm not sure what to do. I've got a lack of faith in myself suddenly. And these your emotional states and your familial love and nurturing sort of thing is so critical for the entrepreneur. Because when you're isolated, fighting your demons, you got no one watching your back, you know? And that could be, again, from a very legal or point of view, like, you know, losing the business because of illegal shenanigans, like you were talking about, but also in terms of maintaining your own morale. And you talked about your own belief. And I'm sure I'd like to actually segue from here, because I think one of the interesting things I think about what you do and are doing is the fact that the vision, or a vision, is nested into the kind of DNA of your business. And in fact, a very powerful vision that can almost combines a number of factors. What do you think the role of purpose has been through that time? Could you speak on that?
Honestly, purpose was what got us through it. Without purpose, we would have turned back. And purpose is key. And on a personal level, I believe that every one of us was born with a purpose. Everyone gets the call of the hero, but a lot of people lack the courage to go on that journey and settle for the easy option, which is often a career that they don't enjoy, but it pays the bills. And then for me, it's a bit like you can have a life where you really live, and you know that you live because there are highs and lows. It's a bit like a cardiogram. You know somebody's living because it's the highs and lows. When you're flatlining or existing, that means you're dead. And that means that you might be existing, but you're not really living. And life is about those highs and lows. So you should embrace them. But I think that if I wasn't living a life of purpose, and for me, purpose is all about helping other people, I firmly believe that you come onto this planet to leave your mark, leave a legacy, because otherwise I just wouldn't want to exist and think that I came this way, I bought a house, I had a job, and then I died. I want to know that I came this way. As a result of my existence, I help thousands of people to enjoy a better quality of life. I help the planet. I help to save the planet in my own sweet way. So green tech is very much a part of my life. And do you know, when I had this, the purpose became clear to me at the age of 4. And I remember it so vividly because I was watching a documentary series called Disappearing Worlds, and I'm revealing my age now. But it was about a tribe in Africa whose way of life had been threatened by, if you like, climate change and also industrialization, and which had crept into and was taking over the way that they lived their life and encroaching on the way they lived life. And I remember at the time, so they were suffering from famine. And I remember at the time thinking, oh my God, at 4, I really want to help these people. And the only way I can do that is by becoming a scientist and coming up with solutions that will make their lives better. And I look at it now and I think that's really bizarre of a 4-year-old. So in many ways, it made me think, was I born with that purpose? Because I do believe in reincarnation, and I do believe that we were here before and we've come again in this life to learn new things. And obviously I believe that I came with a mission to be of service. So at 4, I was acutely aware of that service. So I set off at 4 with that mission of doing well at school so I could go to university and become a chemist and then create solutions. And then once I did get to university, my life went on a different course because I decided that I really wanted to make programs and use and get involved with journalism so that I could influence others to make change happen. And now I've come full circle and I'm back in science and tech.
Well, it's just fascinating. And what's interesting, I've almost as a child, your creative channel is a bit clearer than it is when you're a grown up.
Yes.
So your instructions from your creative source are a bit more strong.
Yes.
So you had this purpose very clear then, and then you probably persuaded yourself into something else. And I'm sure those skills have been very useful to you now, the sort of broadcasting media communication skills. But now, it's something that I've been reading a book. The regular listeners may have heard me speak about this book. It's called The Artist's Way. And it's about how you unblock creativity. And a lot of it all comes down to that sort of embracing the child, the play, the experimentation, the sort of just doing it because, right?
Yes.
That urge, that sense of purpose, that sense of drive is very pure at that point. And you can muddy it by, you know, complicated things like, I don't know, houses and mortgages and what have you. But I think that's really interesting that you had that so clearly. And how do you think that's kind of... that's been helping you through these dark times, and how do you think that's persuaded others to come with you?
Well, you know, you put your finger on the pulse there. That I think that play is really important for unleashing people's hidden creator, if you like. And so, what we do with our Proto Weavy STEM Challenge, we get young people, and now we're going to be doing it with our adults. Playing with technologies to create a go-kart, electric go-kart that works. And through play, they are, and there's no pressure applied, but through playing around and experimenting with where you put your batteries, where you put your master controller, where how you capture data and how you use sensor technologies in order to drive, to ensure that your cart performs well. There is no pressure to perform. It's all hands-on. You don't have to be good at the theory, but actually what you have to do is enjoy it. And I think enjoying what you do, it's like Richard Branson always said, he's never worked a day in his life. So actually all of us need to spend time to find out what is it that I enjoy doing. What is it that helps me to feel fulfilled? And for me, it's definitely creative exploits. But if more of us could get, one of the best things that I ever enjoyed, I don't know if you've ever done it, Dan, is create your vision using Lego.
No, I haven't done
that. I did that in a session once, and we had to envision where we wanted to be in 5 years, but use Lego blocks to do that. And that, well, I loved every minute of that. But actually, it's really helped to, if you like, to really structure your thinking to begin to think, yeah, what does the future look like? And you can have fun while you're doing it. So I would suggest to anybody is that playing with Lego, even as an adult, is one of the best things that you can do for developing your problem solving and creative side of your brain, because your brain is a muscle. And like any muscle, if you don't use a creative side, it gets flabby. So actually, you have to spend time and effort. And the important bit about this to say is, going forward into the future, robots are going to be taking a lot of the jobs that logic, if you like, that automation will take a lot of jobs. Logic also, computers can be logical, but what they can't be is creative. So by developing your creative side, you will ensure that you will always have a job, because at this moment in time, computers cannot compete with human beings in terms of being creative. Being creative is almost our God-given talent. And each of us, I believe, is like God, in terms of the ocean is made up of lots of droplets of water, and each of us have this God spirit inside us. And that's what makes human beings unique from any other species on this planet, is our ability to be creative and to create. That's why we've built structures. That's why we're the ones who created cars, rockets to the moon. And that's why no other species has been able to do that. So that is your God-given talent. And that is the talent that we should be developing, especially if we want sustainable careers, sustainable ventures into the future, is be creative.
I love it. Be creative. You know, I think this is a really, as we've sort of gone through our stories today and kind of really got under the hood, isn't that a great place to sort of, we're getting towards the end of our time together, but like to wrap up as two words, as a motivational speech, come instruction, call to action. In fact, this is the call to adventure, right? The call to the hero is to be, to you listener, you are the hero. You need to be creative, because being creative is scary. Because a creative thing is new.
Yes.
And people will laugh at you. People will think it's stupid. People will think it's, you know, look at Jackson Pollock or punk. Or when I was growing up, Acid House. It was like, what the hell's this? It's just bleeps. Like, you know, it was just stupid. But this is where innovation, quotes, new things come from. It's the creative act. And we have that within us. But you've got to clear that channel. Get back to your inner child who has that spirit and can connect to the source, that God spirit that you were talking about. I totally agree with that. Okay, so we're nearly at the end of our time, and I'm going to respect your time, but I'm going to ask you a question, which just if you can think about all these things, advice that's out there for entrepreneurs. What's in 60 seconds, what advice should a young up-and-coming entrepreneur ignore?
5-year business plan. Honestly and truly, things change so much. Don't invest, you know what, a business model canvas to guide you that you can change very quickly indeed. But I think the 5-year business plan is out the door. And I think it is just, the other thing I think as well is trust yourself, trust your ideas, even if other people don't believe in them, and other people who are more left brain, who are logical, will say, oh no, it will never work. Because can you imagine the Wright brothers who invented the first aeroplane? And you go to somebody and think, I think I want to create an aeroplane which will fly, and everybody will think, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually now it's a way of life, isn't it? So that's what I would say to anybody is believe in yourself, believe in your ideas. It may well be that, like ourselves, we were ahead of our time and now the rest of the world is caught up with us. But, business model canvas, and also the other thing is just be resilient. But ignore that advice of a 5-year business plan.
Yeah, I mean, coming back to where we started, the conversation about adaptability, about things, the tide moving in a different direction.
Yeah. You know,
with all of our recent experiences with lockdowns and let alone kind of international incidents when, you know, and what have you, you can't predict what's going to happen in 6 months.
Exactly.
Just so you've got to have this flow state. You said at the start this Bruce Lee quote about being like water. It's flowing with the tide, being adaptable, flowing. And I think that's a really, for me, something I it rings true for me. And I think that's a great takeaway for people for today. But we're going to wrap it up there. But I mean, seriously, love that. There's so much good stuff. Be creative, people. Take that hero's journey. Take the call to adventure and you'll build your business. So please give it up. And thank you so much. It's been a fantastic conversation. And hopefully I'll see you soon, Marina.
Definitely, Dan. Take care, everyone.
Cheers. Bye.
Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode emailed to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyiblewupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyiblewupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box, just enter it in and we will send you that information. And it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening and I'll see you next time.